they're going up. It's way over $33 million of need. We're saying this needs to be part of the mix in the discussion that comes forward. The next one deals with, as part of that same special appropriation, there's money put aside, $3.7 million, for if the drug management actions we implement as a result of the discussions during session do not bear forth the revenues or the savings or whatever you want to call it that we expect, we're saying that should be part of the mix in terms of the discussions. And by special session, we can come forward with a report on how those are working so far. But, of course, many of those we need approval from the federal government, and we're still working on that, getting that approval. The next item, $900,000, is specifically dealing with the reimbursement for institutional pharmacies, another special appropriation.
Representative Winters.
Just a question going back to the management action with respect to savings and are those waivers that you're talking about the ones that we're working on in the application waiver review? Or are there other waivers that you're seeking?
There are a series of waivers. I can ask Lynn Reed to come forward if you'd like to get that detail, or we can sort of
give you can just pass the information to me.
Okay.
I don't want to hold up the
hopefully Lynn
process.
Can do that.
Madam Chair. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going back to the $3 million special appropriation for health plan caseload, what's the impact to Oregonians if we accept that cut? Does that mean X number, and what's the X Oregonians who would otherwise be able to collect Oregon health plan benefits won't? Or does it mean that those who are collecting collect a smaller amount? How does it play out in people's lives?
Madam Chair, Representative Nolan, in terms of the health plan, we view that as an entitlement program, mm-hmm. as it's structured right now, meaning that if you meet the eligibility requirements that we presently operate under, you're eligible for the service. So, you know, one, we would be coming back to you to talk about what we'll use as terms of management actions to have to take to control that caseload. It may be a lowering of the benefit level. It may be another cut that's further down the list about what, you know, around terms of timing of eligibility. It could be a number of things. In the past, we have always come to you for any major change in that program or any of our major programs that affect that kind of level. So there are a number of things you could do, but you would be an active partner in helping us make that decision and implementing that decision. Mm-hmm. It could be a variety of things. I'm not sure in terms of it could be we have to find more revenue to put on a program to keep it going. That's what we've done in the past when the health plan's gone over budget. Or we would have to make either benefit or eligibility cuts, you know, briefly stated.
Hold on. Just quickly, it seems that in the first few pages there are some things of new programs that are being postponed and some accounting, as Representative Winters called it, creative accounting. It seems that we're not even out of the first 2%, and here we're hitting decisions about people who don't get benefits or who get less benefit, you know, pay for 90% of your appendectomy. Okay, I just wanted to make sure that I was understanding
that. Yeah, and it's that's the nature of our programs. It doesn't take too far to get out and having to start making cuts that affect individuals or providers, depending on the structure of them.
Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Doug. So just to clarify, though, can you quantify the number of people? I mean, this could not be done without making significant changes in the Oregon health plan. I mean, if the health plan continues structured as it is, this would just cut off X number of people, because you told us earlier in your presentation that the growth figures on the health plan are now beyond what was projected in the budgeting process.
Madam Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, what we're assuming here is you have the state budget shortfall, and plus we have issues internally that's outside of that. And what we're suggesting, one reason we didn't do a November rebalance, is we deal with that together. Because you really can't, I mean, it's hard to deal with those separately, necessarily, given the size of the issues on both sides. And so we're putting forward things here that address both those issues. This is a caseload reserve. We assumed coming out of session based on what Bobby termed the no flex, or you know the low or the yeah the no flex caseload assumptions that we had, that we had enough money in the health plan to fund that what we expected coming out of session. Those estimates were understated, and that's what this particular fund is for. This $3 million caseload reserve is to address those.
Madam Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, the point is here, if we got to a situation where we had to reduce the health plan budget by $3 million in order to balance, it's what this, there's really only two ways to do that. One is to limit eligibility to the health plan, which means fewer people would get access to it, or reduce the benefit level some way. So those are the two options, and we, what Doug said earlier, is we would negotiate with you how best to do that. So it's very difficult for us to say how many clients that would be, because it would depend on the decision that we'd make around the reduction in eligibility or program.
Just to follow up, Madam Chair, I appreciate, Mr. Mink, that this is a process everybody needs to do together, but this is the figure that we're looking at that projects an inadequate amount or just the caseload that we thought we might be looking at. Now we know we're looking at not how much, but we know we're looking at a bigger caseload. You can tell us in terms of the way the health plan is structured now how many people would have to be kicked off it at a $3 million cut of funding to the health plan, right?
Based on some assumptions.
If everything else stayed the same.
If everything else stayed the same, we could do that, yes.
In fact, the last program I've talked about will sort of address, the last cut that we have on the list here will address some of your what you're asking about.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
I don't want to tie us up too long. We're going through the Oregon Health Plan, a plan I know well, at about twice the speed of sound, and it's going to be difficult to cover everything. But, Doug, I have some questions, Manager, if I could, just for a moment. You're making some very difficult assumptions, and I think possibly assumptions that nobody can make. We're doing two things to drive the caseload larger than the Oregon Health Plan. One, we're unraveling some services to keep people off the Oregon Health Plan. That's the first few pages here. And we have something we can't control at all. That's the recession that's going to drive people to the Oregon Health Plan. They lose their jobs and lose their health insurance and drop on the Oregon Health Plan. There's a couple of scenarios that will spin out of that are really, truly nasty. One is that as you drop people off the Oregon Health Plan, if that's the decision that's made, we lose our 60-40 split. The Oregon Health Plan has brought $1.5 billion to the state of new federal money that we would not have if it weren't for the Oregon Health Plan. We'll start losing that money also. And that will place a bigger burden on our hospitals, because that's where those people are going for the health care. It's very expensive. It's a bad way to treat people. And the economic impact on the state then becomes even worse, because you're talking about raising commercial rates, which are already sky high in the state because of Medicare problems, are being raised now by this plan. So you start a process of unraveling here. This committee needs to understand, because this is a huge part of the budget. And as you unravel this program and run it backwards, you'll start losing federal funds and building health care costs into the whole health care system of the state, not just OHP. So we have to look at the entire picture when we start talking about these figures. And I would tell you, Doug, that as much as you and I work together, as much as I trust your figures, I know how hard you've done this thing, I don't think any of us can predict what will happen as far as caseload is concerned. You're making your best estimates, but you might come back with significantly different figures in a month, 2 months, or 3 months from now. And this committee needs to understand that. And it's not a reflection on you. It's a reflection on things we have no control over, and you're reporting as best you can. Is that a fair assumption?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, I think the thing to say is I'm sure the numbers will change, because we are not going to, we'll never forecast exactly. It's like the state economist, his numbers always change from forecast. There are so many variables in this process. Representative Bates is right. It's, you know, you start unraveling is a term he used, but at the same time, we can't cut this budget by 10% without impacting those programs that make up. I mean, the health plan makes up almost a third of our budget, and it's, you can't avoid in making these kinds of cuts that, or proposing these kinds of cuts without, you know, touching those major programs, whether it's the health plan or the long-term care, for example.
Committee, I would caution everybody to be mindful of the schedule that we're on.
Moving on, Madam Chair, page 11. This is another new program that was put in place by the legislature as part of the sort of trying to address the drug cost issues. This is, again, another special appropriation of the E-Board for roughly $5 million for a senior prescription assistance program. Keep in mind there's another part in the senior area that would allow us to pay pharmacies the Medicaid rate for those seniors that signed up for the program. That program would continue. If this would be an added reduction in cost for those individuals by the use of it. This would have been a new program. We've again delayed implementation of it. The next one is free money for us in a sense on the bottom of page 11. I talked about the match rate for the Medicaid program and some of our other programs being about 60% federal, 40% state. That match rate changes every year. And to give you a perspective on how much impact that has, if that rate changes by one percentage point, for example, if the federal share goes from 60% to 59%, that's over $50 million of general fund we need to insert in our budget to keep the same program level. So, and that match rate changes. Now, what's happening here since session, we actually are getting a little bit better. The basis are going up about 33/100ths of a percentage point, and that brings in about $16.6 million into our figures. That means it could go down in the next year, and we would have to put money back into the budget instead of taking general fund out to get the same program level. But just the scale of that is something you need to keep in mind. And I talked a little bit about what's happening at the federal level around the match rate. A potentially one-year bump in the match rate across the country could benefit us significantly. Moving on, page 12, we have a little extra tobacco tax revenue we're carrying forward, a little over $1 million. We're suggesting we use that to free up general fund. We also, the bottom one there, medically fragile children is a program that our seniors and people with disabilities cluster operates. And we had to make some assumptions around what third-party coverage would be in terms of what third parties would contribute to the payment of services for those clients. We didn't think they would participate at the level that we're finding they're participating at, so we're able to free up $1.5 million of general fund to be replaced by the same amount of third-party insurance payments. And that figure is going to go up and down to another area that we have to adjust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, can you tell me what the $2.1 million in other funds, federal funds, savings is there?
This program, Representative or Madam Chair, is receives that Medicaid match. So the general fund we put forward, we're able to match with Medicaid dollars.
And just to follow up, you indicate here that the eligibility criteria, if they were to change and be adjusted, other people may qualify. Can I get the numbers of how many people qualify now, what the eligibility is, and what changes potentially could be made that would add more people? Thank you.
Page 13, we're almost done with the first 2%. This is eliminates funding for an adult crisis home for the DD population. This is actually, these funds are in a special reserve fund from the E-Board, and we're saying this needs to be part of the mix, and we need to look at this money again in terms of a larger budget issue. We would have to manage as we are now managing. This would create some greater burden on both the department and counties on how to deal with this population, as well as the families and other caregivers. But again, these are difficult reductions. And finally, the last one here in the first 2% there was money added at the end of session to enhance the Retired Senior Volunteer Program. This was general fund over and above the federal funds that flow directly to these programs. And we are suggesting that you reduce that amount. The federal funds would still flow to those programs. There would be one program that we're taking a look at that might be at risk of not being able to operate without these, and that would be the program in Bend, because it hasn't been certified by the feds as able to receive the federal funds that they're getting. So that's the first 2% already into some that hurt, no doubt. The second 2% starts off the lottery again, just because that's at the top of each increment. Again, this is a similar reduction for this gambling addiction program. We would continue to remove the planned opening or planned development of a residential type of facility for gambling addiction. It doesn't cut into the ongoing outpatient services for those addicted to gambling. The second item there is we suggest that a reduction would be to discontinue the food stamp outreach program that was funded at the end of session. It was $100,000 put at the end of session to continue and enhance outreach efforts that are out there. Actually, that was only $100,000. The biggest impact is what we expect happens to the health plan, and that makes up the bulk of these savings is really the enhanced caseload that we assume, and it's an assumption again, it's an estimate of the impact on the health plan based on some of the work we've done in the past.
Representative Starr.
Just on this one item, you're cutting or proposing to cut nearly $1.5 million in general fund. Does that, and then that costs us an additional $2 million in federal funds? Just so I'm that clear.
Madam Chair, Representative Starr, you'll start seeing a lot of that because of that Medicaid. Almost all of our dollars go to match federal funds. And so you're going to lose federal
funds. You cut one general fund, you lose two federal
funds. Roughly. You cut 40 cents of general fund, you lose 60 cents of federal.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On this particular program, could you give us an estimate also, in addition to the money we're missing on the match, what we'd lose in the actual food stamps that were not being purchased any further? I mean, by not doing outreach, we also lose the food stamps, which are not a match program. Aren't there straight funds coming in, if my memory is correct? And so we need to know what that loss is also to the state.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, will be an estimate as almost everything we do, but we'll make
that. We'll do that.
On page 15, this is eliminating child care for families over 150%. And they presently cover up to 185%, I believe, and this would back it down and affect a little over 600 families. We assume that 10% or 60 of those families would return to the cash assistance.